noisy stroke risks. Overdose is the new leading cause of death. New CPR video kiosks. And we'll talk with EMS educator Bob Sullivan about his article series on 10 things you need to know in EMS. If that's what you're looking for, you found it right here on this week's episode of the MedicCast.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters.
This is the MedicCast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers, featuring EMS news, products, tips, tricks, and commentary. So grab your gear and glove up. Here's today's show with the PodMedic, Jamie Davis.
Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of the MedicCast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the PodMedic, and I'd like to take this opportunity to go ahead and welcome all of you to this week's program. We've got a great show for you. Starting up in our EMS news items, we're going to talk about several interesting EMS articles, including a look at a novel approach to teaching the public hands-only CPR using a video kiosk at public events. Then in this week's special tip interview segment, I have paramedic educator Bob Sullivan back on the show to chat about his excellent article series over at EMS1.com. Bob writes about EMS topics there and the 10 things EMS providers need to know for each topic. It includes education and some simple EMS tips you can take with you. We'll have that and more later on in the show coming up after the news. Before we get to that, though, I do want to make sure you check out the links and additional information available for you over at the MedicCast blog at mediccast.com/blog. There's a show notes link at the top of the page. Just click that link and it'll take you right to the most recent episode. You can also scroll down there and find previous episodes if you want. There's also a search box on the site, so in the upper right-hand corner, if you're looking for something, put in some keywords and look for it. But take time and make sure you follow up on the information you get on the show so you understand how it applies to your own EMS practice and protocols. If you want to get back in touch with me, maybe you've done that and you have a question, please do so. You can email me directly at podmedic@mac.com. Shoot me an email with your comments and questions on the shows, or you can just send me suggestions and interview ideas for future episodes. Either way, I work hard to respond back to every email that comes in, and I'll get back to you as well, so please keep them coming. Also, don't forget, we've got EMS World Expo coming up really soon in September. So if you're going to be there, I want you to make sure you come by our Physio Control podcast studio and say hi. We'll be there along with Chris Montera, Sam Bradley, and others of your favorite EMS podcasters and bloggers. So come on by. That's it. That's enough introduction. Let's go ahead and get on into the news. That's coming right up next. Kicking off the news this week is an interesting study I found over at healthday.com about the risks of noise pollution on your health. Now, what would you say if long-term exposure to traffic noise could shorten your life? Not easy to avoid if you're an EMS provider in a busy ambulance service. Researchers at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, I don't know what that has to do with tropical medicine, but they found that the exposure to routine urban traffic noise could raise your risk for things like stroke later in life. Now, this seems to relate to problems getting enough sleep, and we've talked about that here on the show in the past as being related to future health issues. The study comes from the UK and is the first to show this link early in life to death and stroke later on. The authors of the study say that while there's a link in the research, it's not as strong, though, as other modifiable risk factors like diet, exercise, and living a healthy lifestyle. These things all have a much greater impact on your long-term health and longevity. And I point this out and this article out because these types of news items come up all the time, and people often cite the headlines without reading the whole article to get the underlying facts. You, as a healthcare professional, can be an advocate for better health in your community by being a curator of these articles. You can be the one who provides the correct information when someone quotes just the headline as a reason for a given health-related or non-health-related activity. This goes back to our call to be involved in and proponents for prevention and healthy lifestyle efforts in the public health arena. So be a person who looks beyond the headlines. Be a person who sees that it's not just traffic noise that causes strokes, but also many other easily modified lifestyle factors that can reduce somebody's risk for cardiovascular disease later in life. Next up in our news, may not be the news for the average EMT or paramedic out there, but the CDC reported recently that the number of drug overdose deaths have become so high that they have surpassed other injury causes of death. Drug overdose is now the number one cause of injury-related death in the U.S. According to the article I found over at Medscape.com, a recent report from the University of Iowa College of Public Health shows that more than 2 million people abuse prescription drugs every year. Now, as I said in a recent article here on the show, this is also contributing to the increase in heroin use nationwide. The report also looks at all injury-related deaths by state and found some startling contrasts between different states. West Virginia is the most dangerous state for injury-related deaths. It has a death rate of nearly 100 per 100,000 people. Now, this is more than double the state with the lowest injury death rate, New York State. Motor vehicle death rates continue to fall and have dropped by 25% in the past 10 years. And to put all the injury death rates into perspective, the article calculates that one person dies from an injury or overdose-related cause every 3 minutes in the U.S. Most of these deaths are predictable and preventable. The trick for communities around the country like yours is to identify the causes that are prevalent in your area and adapt your services' prevention efforts to meet the area of need you have. So if you have overdose issues, focus on prescription drug safety and security. Talk to your leaders about community-based naloxone programs to reduce deaths. If you see an uptick in teen driving deaths, for instance, you can focus on seatbelt use, the no texting while driving pledges, and similar efforts. Your local health department can help you identify what is the low-hanging fruit for your community, and then maybe you can partner with them to address it. I urge you to do something like this in your area, and of course, if you do, please let me know about it. I can maybe feature it here on a future episode of the MedicCast. Finally, in our EMS news this week, let's take a look at a great CPR learning system that one Vermont advanced EMT assembled. He was inspired by a system that was created by the American Heart Association and deployed in the Dallas airport. He saw their system and decided to make it even better by allowing bystanders to practice CPR while kneeling on a kiosk platform with a video screen in front of them and do compressions on a mannequin. He custom built the cabinet to be portable so his service could deploy it around their community at different events, and he partnered with HSI.com's Loop Learning System to create a quick community CPR learning tool for teaching CPR in a fun and innovative way. Richmond Rescue in Vermont now sends the kiosk out around the community and is seeing a lot of people using it to learn CPR while following the prompts from the video screen on the kiosk. It's a great system, and actually I hope they make it readily reproducible so that other systems can create something similar in their community. Imagine this at your local fairs, carnivals, other community events. It would be a great way to teach hundreds of people the basics of CPR and how to recognize sudden cardiac arrest. It could shift the outcomes for many of the cardiac arrest calls in your community just by teaching more bystanders CPR. Kudos to AEMT Luke Jackson and his squad for innovating and improving his community through prevention and educational efforts like the CPR training kiosk. If you do something like this, I hope you're going to let me know about it. I don't want to just read about it in a press release somewhere, so shoot me an email here to the MedicCast or leave a comment on this article, and maybe I can have a chat with you or interview you for a future episode. I look forward to hearing from you. This week on our show, I chat with Bob Sullivan on his series of articles at EMS1.com on 10 things you need to know about EMS topics. He covers a variety of important topics that hold refresher education and simple tips to improve your EMS care as an EMT or paramedic. Bob's an educator for paramedics in Delaware and is also an EMS blogger over at EMSPatientPerspective.com. So check out what he has to say about EMS refresher knowledge and professionalism and his series of articles over at EMS1.com. Bob, welcome back to the MedicCast. It's always great to have you on, and I really was intrigued by when I found your series of articles over at EMS1.com. On 10 things you need to know as an EMS provider. And it's just a series of different topics under that kind of overarching heading. And I was really intrigued by it because I think it's a great way of looking at continuing education and refresher learning and all the things that we should be doing as healthcare professionals. So first of all, welcome back. It's great to have you and see you again.
Thanks, Jamie. It's great to be back. I appreciate it. It's the series is 10 things you need to know to save lives and design EMS one. And what that's exactly what I wanted to do. My goal with writing was to just take little nuggets that maybe you sort of forgot about since going to school, or maybe there are some bad habits that you got into, just to sort of like refresh your memory. So something that you can apply to the next shift, and maybe it's whether doing a 12-lead EKG on a chest pain patient, why you should do it in the house before moving them to the ambulance, or why you should remember to take a temperature on patients. That's something that everyone in the hospital, you know, does without thinking, but it's pretty new to EMS, and there's some pretty compelling reasons why we should be checking a temperature. And so little things like that that you can apply to your next call.
I love it. I think it's a great approach to, again, just getting people thinking about how they approach their refresher knowledge. You know, I don't care how long you've been doing this or how often you run calls and what kind of patient acuity you see, you're still in need of refreshing your knowledge and getting in there and saying, oh, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've read articles and sat there and scratched my head going, you know, either I didn't know that or I forgot that I knew that. And those are two things that can be very dangerous for a person who considers themselves an experienced medic in the field, getting out there and thinking that they have all the answers.
Yeah, and I've learned a lot myself putting the series together. And we both, you know, are pretty up on the literature, and we stay current with reading. So this is a good opportunity for me to improve my practice as well. So, and that's what... I also like packaging things. I even things that are easily digestible.
Mm-hmm.
And so the 10 things you should know, it kind of does that. That sort of fits with my teaching and my learning style.
Yeah. So tell us some of the topics you covered. I know I found the article you did on sepsis, but you've done other topics, everything from transport hospital destinations to just name it. But go ahead and tell us some of the ones that are stick in your mind as your favorites.
Okay. Well, first, the series is actually sponsored by Pulsera, which is an app that timestamps intervention findings and is used to share data. And the first article was about STEMI care and how door-to-balloon time is so important, the time to aspirin is important, time to oxygen is not important anymore as long as patients aren't hypoxic. That's sort of every chance I get to sort of dispel that myth that was drilled into us when we were initially trained, I take. And just how pre-arrival notifications. There's another article about stroke. There's an article about sepsis. And there's the specialty team center activation. Focuses on the role that we have in the patient's longer-term care in the hospital. Because we want instant gratification. We want a defibrillating the fibrillating heart back into a sinus rhythm. We want to give someone dextrose and have them wake up. But really, for some of the sickest patients, we sort of feel like our hands are tied. But if we can do a thorough assessment, if we can ask the right questions and relay the right answers to the hospital, give them time to assemble the resources. Give them, because when there's a sepsis alert for the hospitals that are doing, you know, code sepsis or sepsis alerts or trauma teams or stroke teams or STEMI responses. You're pulling people from all over the hospital who have different jobs to do, and they're all meeting in the ER. And if we can give them that notification, let them huddle, come up with a treatment plan based on if we can report the age, their findings, their objective assessment findings, let them all get together before the patient arrives. And that can have a much bigger impact on their outcomes than we'll probably know.
I completely agree. And it is, but you have to know the right questions to ask for those patients. You need to know when you're missing a vital sign, an important vital sign like temperature. You know, you're right. I mean, as a nurse, temperature is one of my vital signs. When I go to take vitals on a patient, it's automatic along with respiration, pulse, pain, level, all those things become part of that assessment and vital signs But in EMS, we didn't learn it that way. We learned just the few vital signs, and we didn't do the extra stuff. And now we have to add pain level, and we have to add temperature as a matter of course to our standardized assessments.
Yeah, and as an educator, it's a lot more in depth than OPQRST SAMP. Mm-hmm. It's a lot more dynamic than that. And when we start making determinations about should we activate the specialty teams, because it's a finite resource. If we overcall too many, they're just going to say, "Oh, okay, well, just bring them to the ER and we'll evaluate them when you get here."
Right.
Because you're taking away care that's being rendered to other people in the hospital already. Or when we're deciding what hospital we should go to, one of the articles is about cardiac arrest and some treatments. And I know you've discussed this with guests on your show in the past about ECMO and catheterizations for patients in cardiac arrest. Well, those are only available at certain hospitals. So you may end up driving with a patient in cardiac arrest past a community hospital, which is much, much different than the way things have been done. And right. It's a lot more complicated to know which patient is a candidate for that. So I think that the value of assessment is becoming so much more important. And an understanding of pathophysiology about things like sepsis and trauma, and even now strokes, with trying to predict large vessel occlusions versus smaller strokes. There's going to be more detailed stroke scales that are coming, and we're going to have to do a much better job with our assessment. We're going to do more thorough assessment and have a better understanding about what we're actually looking for and what's important to relay to the hospital when we make a treatment and a transport decision.
And this is why I think it's important to think in terms of a short list of things that you need to keep in mind. Which is what you've set up with this 10 Things You Need to Know series. It's a list of things that's manageable. It's a list of things that is important to keep in mind. And it builds your critical thinking skills. It really adds to that toolbox so that you can make those decisions based on a critical thought process of what's going on and the anatomy and physiology, your knowledge about what's going on with the specific patient, everything else put together, and then you make a decision based upon that. And your toolbox has been put there. Do you find this series has helped you? I know you're an educator for paramedic students. Do you find putting this series together has been able to transfer into the classroom?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'm covering a lot of the topics that I've written about. So it's made me brush up on and read some literature I probably would not have read otherwise. But just packaging it has sort of been, okay, well, if I need to know 10 things, the assignment was you're on an elevator or you're passing someone by in the hallway. What are the 10 most important things that you would want a working EMT or paramedic to know? So sort of packaging it, like, what is most important? If my students leave the class, and, you know, if they only remember 10 things, what would I want those to be? And so it helped me plan how I present it that way as well. So it's helped both sides.
That's great. So this can be found over at emsone.com.
Mm-hmm.
But you also have your own blog. So tell folks a little bit about where you can find that so we can make sure that they can find you in both locations.
Okay, so this is the articles are on emsone.com. My blog is the EMS Patient Perspective at emspatientperspective.com.
Excellent. And that's an important thing to keep in mind. I love the name of your blog because it is about putting things in perspective from the patient's point of view. So often we look at patients as interruptions to our daily routine.
Sure.
And it's important, I think, to consider that we're there because the patient needs us to be there and not that there's some kind of necessary evil that goes along with us riding around in a truck all day.
Sure. And yes, I set it up just because there was I think that's easy to forget that who we're here for and put aside some of the politics that come with, you know, multiple agencies responding or not getting along with your partner or, you know, organizations or conflicts with the hospitals. If you keep the end goal in mind, which is excellent patient care, even if you don't get along with the nurse that you're turning the patient over to, you need to be professional, and you just need to be compassionate towards our patients, and we need to be just compassionate towards each other too, and just keeping the end goal in mind, at least when we're on the call.
Yep, definitely. Well, Bob, it's great having you here on the MedicCast as always. I look forward to having you back again, hopefully not so long in the future, and we can catch up with each other again, maybe at a conference in the near future too.
I hope so. So very good. Thanks so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, you're welcome. That's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. I want to thank all of you for checking out the show this week, and of course, remind you to follow up on all of the information you get in this week's show over at the MedicCast blog. That's at mediccast.com/blog. Over there, you'll find a show notes link at the top of the page. Go ahead and take a moment and follow up on all of the information and links to news items and more you find there each week. You can also sign up for our email newsletter that'll bring you those links directly into your email inbox each week if you want. There's a form on the right-hand side of the page. Just go ahead and fill that out, and you can get the MedicCast newsletter for yourself. I also welcome your comments and suggestions by email. So if you want to get back in touch with me, shoot me an email to podmedic@mac.com. Send in your ideas for news links, ideas for future show topics or interviews, whatever comments you might have. I really do look forward to hearing from you, and I'll make sure I get back to you. I work hard to respond back to every email that comes in, so please keep those emails coming. If you want to catch up with me on social media and some of the pages and sites out there, you can find me at most places under the handle PodMedic. So you can catch me over at Twitter at twitter.com/PodMedic or Facebook at facebook.com/PodMedic. Friend or follow me over there. Also, don't forget to check out our MedicCast Facebook page. We now have over 5,000 followers, so head over to facebook.com/MedicCast. Click the like button on the top of the page and join the community over there. That's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. Please make sure you spread the word and share the MedicCast with your colleagues and students and friends in the EMS world. I'll be back here each week with new episodes, new interviews, news items, tips, and more every Monday morning to start off your EMS week. Tell somebody else about the MedicCast today. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. It's time to close out the show. Don't forget to thank our sponsors. And remember, folks, scene safety, BSI.